Most of us are familiar with what satellite technology can do. Beyond its military applications, thanks to portable GPS systems, it's changed the way most of us find our way on the roads. But now satellites are helping monitor and, in some cases, avoid human rights atrocities around the world. That's the goal of the Satellite Sentinel Project, based at Harvard University's Harvard Humanitarian Initiative. It uses satellite imagery to follow the movement of military vehicles, rebel forces, or other activities that might be leading to an attack on civilian populations in places like Sudan and most recently Syria. Nathaniel Raymond is Director of Operations for the Satellite Sentinel Project, and he joins me now in the studio. Nathaniel Raymond, good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about how the Satellite Sentinel Project came to be.
It came about in basically October of 2010. George Clooney and John Prendergast of the Enough Project went to Sudan to see the situation on the ground in the months preceding the historic secession of South Sudan from the north. And George Clooney came back to the United States with a question, which is, if we can see my house from space, is it going to be possible to monitor threats to civilians in this crucial period where the South is seceding? And can we do that immediately to create the first sustained satellite monitoring service over a active conflict zone?
So how does that work? I mean, where did you get the satellites? I mean, I assume you didn't launch the satellites. They're already up there. So you get you sort of buy into them, rent them, use them. How does that work?
We have had a game-changing partnership with Digital Globe, a corporation that collects commercial satellite imagery but also collects imagery for the U.S. government. It's the same satellites that U.S. intelligence community uses. We use in a non-classified way to take pictures sometimes several times a week over Sudan.
I see. So you've been active for about 15 months now. What have you actually found in these satellite images?
We have three postures: detection, deterrence, and documentation. And unfortunately, we have been detecting night and day since the launch of the project. There's been three invasions by the North into disputed areas in northern Sudan. Last summer, we released three reports documenting apparent mass graves and body bags. And it was that reporting that ended up causing 60 members of Congress to write to President Obama and ask for a change in U.S. policy to try and stop those atrocities. It was a transformational moment. Usually, you have to be able to enter the area to find that evidence. You have to be able to be secure while you're there, and you have to be able to deploy a team that can collect it. But now, with the use of the Satellite Sentinel model, we can go to non-permissive environments, places where no one is allowed, and within sometimes 12 to 24 hours, begin to collect evidence of an apparent mass atrocity. That evidence is now being used, according to an article in Time magazine, as part of the International Criminal Court's investigation of the defense minister of Sudan. That type of investigative effort would usually take months or years, and now that evidence was collected within 24 to 48 hours of an event.
Have you had cases where the satellite images actually helped you prevent an atrocity or warn people to take action, to clear out, to get help, something like that?
What we call Paul Revere mode.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the case of the city of Kurmuk in Blue Nile State in September of last year, we detected the Sudan Armed Forces moving southward in the vicinity of Kurmuk. We warned the civilians on the ground and the humanitarian actors there a month before they were in position to attack. And with that warning, 24 to 48 hours afterwards, the UN High Commission for Refugees reported at least 1,500 additional refugees streaming across the border into Ethiopia. And that was, for us, a proof of concept moment unlike any other, because we are not static actors. We have a direct interface with what's happening on the ground. And that was a moment where we could show that early warning is possible and has a real value in terms of human life.
Can you actually see what's going on in real time, or are you choosing when to actually see you know, the aftermath of a particular event?
The way we put it is that every day we go to the geospatial casino and we place a bet. In order to place that bet on a 24-hour cycle, we need to be able to have a system for digesting huge amounts of open source and closed source data. What that means is publicly available information about events and also events from confidential sources. Through geocoding, through putting everything to a GPS point that comes out of this data, we are able basically to have the data talk to the images. And what I mean by that is we're able to take this visual data and combine it with the text data and overlay it in a way where patterns emerge. And then we can time when we are going to task the satellites over an area based on the predictive expectation of the patterns from our data log.
Let me ask you about this, and I'm just wondering if the question of any kind of ethics comes into this work. Is there a balance here, or what's the question that you have to ask using this method to save lives but not referring to it as or considering it as espionage? How do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you're raising the key point here, which is there are every day incidents where catastrophic success can occur. And no one has written the rule book for this. And we are having to make calls about what we show and what we don't show. If we lay out specific coordinates, we could be providing a firing solution for artillery. If we present information in one way that suggests the appearance of a confidential informant, people could go and try to kill a population that they think is providing us with actionable information. So it's not about the technology alone. That opens the door to horrible blowback consequences. It's about creating a standardized and international law-based approach to something that is human rights documentation, but also humanitarian aid.
Fascinating. You know, it wasn't long ago that it would have been hard to imagine that this kind of technology was even going to be available in our lifetimes. Now that it is, what's sort of the next step?
The challenge now is to create an ethical compass. Is there a right for people in harm's way to have intelligence about their own survival? Do governments have a responsibility, like we have a responsibility to protect, which caused us to intervene, the United States to intervene with NATO and Libya? Do we have a concurrent and linked responsibility to warn? If so, how do we fulfill that responsibility? And now that we are in a world where this capability is available outside of the intelligence services, how do we use it in a way that does not cause unintended catastrophic harm?
It's big questions and big implications for what all this means for human rights monitoring internationally, doesn't it?
And the new model now is the people on the ground with information communication technologies, i.e. cell phones, having an opportunity to amplify and project their own voice. And the challenge is, how do we use these information communication technologies, geospatial technologies, to create a platform for the voice of people who once had been voiceless, but now, thanks to Nokia, have a voice, to turn that into a way in real time to be not only statically documenting, but actually changing the behaviors of perpetrators by taking away the cloak of impunity.
Nathaniel Raymond, thanks so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Nathaniel Raymond, Director of Operations for the Satellite Sentinel Project based at the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative at Harvard University. He'll be giving a lecture tonight at 6:30 at Boston University's Photographic Resource Center. It's called War Photography for the 21st Century. You can find more information at radioboston.org. And before we go today, a quick comment about our conversation about why have kids. Caltajana writes on our website, "Thank you so much, Christine Overall. Fresh thinking on an issue around which many of us who just don't want kids keep getting pounded by society. We had a lot of calls today. Couldn't get to many of you, but you can keep the conversation going online at radioboston.org. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks. Meghna is back tomorrow with me. Join us then for more Radio Boston."